Welcome to your Friday Night Live. Somebody says, ba-ba. All right. Well, shirtless Steph equals plus five charisma. May not be happening tonight. But you, thank you for the show. Freedomain.com/donate to help out. Hugely appreciated and gratefully accepted. And I can't get hard without Steph. I assume you're just talking about abs. Totally understand it. Steph has added so many babies to the world just by being a wholly positive and sincere guy, my take. Thank you very much. Do think about that. You know, it's funny because I read, it's an old story now, Goodbye, Mr. Chips. And in Goodbye, Mr. Chips, somebody says, let me just take the chair back here. It's making the camera rock a little. Somebody says, well, why didn't you have any kids? To the teacher, right? And he's like, oh, I've had thousands of children over the years, right? Audio is rough. Good evening. Well, it's interesting, man. You know, we could just go full politics. Well, I don't know if it's politics or not, right? There was the healthcare CEO shooting. There's the Daniel Penny situation, which is I've been following in quite a fascinated way. There's a lot that's going down. There's a lot that's going down. Going down more than the backwaters of OnlyFans. But it's your questions and comments. I'm happy to hear what is going on for you guys, what you'd like to chat about, what are your thoughts. I'm eager and keen to hear what you have to say. So let me have it. Otherwise, I will dig into the topics as a whole. Let me just make sure in the various places that are going on that we are, in fact, getting the comments and questions that I need to hear. The comments and questions that I need to hear from you all. You all. And just make sure that I'm in. No messages yet over there. Okay, that's good. Well, that's just fine. Isn't that just fine? What is your opinion on the Penny case and the precedent it will set? I don't know if you guys have spent much time around the legal system. Fortunately, I haven't. I've had some brushes here and there, a couple of flybys, but I haven't spent much time in the legal system. The Daniel Penny case is heartbreaking for me, for sort of the rule of law. So for those of you who don't know, Daniel Penny is an ex-Marine. He was on the subway, and there was this guy, apparently some sort of drug user, who was threatening the people in the subway. And, you know, one of the things that happens with the military guys is, you know, they have a lot of honor. You know, a lot of them have a lot of honor, right? I got my criticisms of the military-industrial complex, but a lot of the guys in the military, they have a lot of honor, and they really do try to do the right thing, and they're taught to step up and help people in need, right? They're definitely taught to step up and help people in need. So Daniel Penny stepped up, and the guy who was threatening people, he stepped up. He put him in they call it a chokehold, but it's a restraining hold. And the guy was still alive, the guy who was threatening, I can't remember his name, Michael Wheelie or something like that. Anyway, Wheelie? I can't remember. But he was still alive, but the cops showed up, but the cops were afraid to give first aid because they were concerned about getting a disease from him. And so he died in police custody, and somehow Penny is charged. He was charged with second degree murder. Now, I'm no lawyer, so like I don't know any of this stuff in particular, but my general understanding is that the jury has been deadlocked, and there have been a number of charges filed. You know what they do? They overfile, right? So that if one gets knocked down, they can charge you with something else. So the jury has been deadlocked, and what that has meant is that the judge, I think, has come in. The latest I've heard, and it's a constantly changing situation, the latest that I've heard is that the judge has stepped in and has dismissed the charge of second-degree manslaughter. Whether that means he can be retried or not is an argument that's happening among legal circles online at the moment. I don't know, of course, the answer, and I don't know that anybody does. But if that's going to be a mistrial means you can be tried again, right? Double jeopardy doesn't apply as far as I know. And it's just, it's terrible. I mean, where are the women out there or the other people who are saying, you know, free this guy? You know, I mean, the left goes out and protests for their people, right? Rightly or wrongly. And where, I assume this is more of a conservative or right-wing cause, where are the people out there? Because this is just another step into lawlessness, right? The purpose of destabilizing authority is to protect and encourage the criminals and then to paralyze people from the capacity for self-defense, right? That is the way that this stuff, I mean, very tragically, very sadly, that is the way that this stuff works, right? There was an old statement from the Soviet Union. I think it was Solzhenitsyn who said something like, if you are attacked, unless you literally have a knife sticking out of yourself, the criminal is assumed to be the innocent party and all of your self-defense will be used against you. And so to paralyze self-defense and to embolden, enable the criminals is one of the problems of corrupt authority. It happens in most late-stage empires and so on. So it's really tragic. And Daniel Penny also, he talked to the cops. I wish it wasn't this way. I'm sure there are a lot of cops who are trying to do the right thing, trying to do a good job. But the reality of the situation is, you know, the cops will sit down and they'll want to be your friend. And, you know, we just want to hear your side of the story. You're not in any trouble. We just want to get your side. You're not a person of interest. You're not a suspect. They'll just sit down and they'll just want to chat with you and so on. And, you know, there is a sort of sibling or fraternal relationship between cops and soldiers or cops and vets, right? So Daniel Penny sat down and he was like, oh, I'm an ex-Marine. And the cop was like, oh, me too. You know, brother to brother, you know, just help me clear this up. You know, you can go on your way and so on. And he talked. And what happened? Well, he talked himself into charges. I don't know because I wasn't there. I think there's a video of it, but you know, there's only two syllables you can say to cops, right? It's only two syllables you can say to cops. Lawyer, 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 lawyer. Talk to a lawyer, talk to a lawyer. Don't talk to me, talk to a lawyer, talk to a lawyer, talk to a lawyer. It's the only thing you can do. I mean, it is sad that the cops are allowed to lie to you. It's sad that the cops are allowed to manipulate you. You can't out talk or outthink the cops, right? I mean, it's, you know, you're stressed, you're tense, you're nervous, and the cops have been doing this for 20 years, and they know the game and you don't. They know the situation and you don't. And I think it's really sad because, again, a lot of people who try to do the right thing in law enforcement, but Daniel Penny, as far as I understand it, had a good old a chat fest and jawbone with the cops. And oof, you know, I wish we lived in a world where you could chat and clear things up and so on, but that doesn't tend to be the political climate that is going on, right? It's really, really sad. So the precedent, I mean, I wasn't there, obviously. I hate to say something so banal, but it's really, really important to remember. I wasn't there. I don't know what happened. I don't know that there was footage on that subway train, but Daniel Penny does not strike me as the kind of guy who just goes around attacking drug addicts in front of witnesses. And there seem to be a lot of people who are quite grateful for the protection that he offered on that train. And the purpose of a lot of this stuff, in my humble opinion, is to demoralize people, right? To leave you feel in a state of anxiety and lack of protection, to remove heroism, to break social bonds, to destroy the male impulse to protect, to make you too nervous about negative consequences, to help out your fellow man. It's very much just a whole demoralizing thing. And, oh my God, I mean, most cities are blue cities, but living in a blue city, I honestly, you couldn't pay me enough. You could not pay me enough to live in a left-wing city. Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously not trying to blame the victim here, and it seems like he tried to do the right thing, and it seems like some, if not most, of the passengers were grateful, but serial criminals should not be out in the streets. And if I again, I'm no lawyer, so I have no idea how you get charged with a murder when the cops take over the scene and the person is alive and the cops don't render first aid. I mean, is it going to be a George Floyd fentanyl situation? I mean, he might beat the rap. You know, as the old saying goes, you can beat the rap, but you can't beat the ride. So I think it's just a really, really sad, really, really sad situation. So I would, you know, this is just a warning, like your life, you know. I think it's a very sad thing. I mean, I remember, and I'm obviously not putting myself in any kind of category like Penny, but I remember when I used to live right downtown in Toronto, long ago. And I wanted a late night snack, and I went out of the, I rented a room in an apartment building, and I went down to the street level in order to go and get some food. And there was a big black guy who was threatening a woman in a wheelchair. And I, you know, I didn't want to, nobody else really does. I, you know, stood up to the guy and told him to back off and give her some space. And, you know, she clearly didn't want to interact with him and so on. And he, for whatever reason, right, I'm not like some big intimidating, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme kickboxing guy, but he did. You know, I find if you're just sort of resolute and focused and stay calm, people do tend to give you some space. It was, of course, in hindsight, a little more risky than I thought at the time. But it was one of these things like, you can't, I mean, it's a woman in a wheelchair, right? You can't just let people just go at them. And so the woman in the wheelchair was very grateful. She was an older woman. And I ended up taking her for some food. And then she tried to chisel more money out of me. And it was, you know, it was just a really tragic, sad dip into this kind of underworld. And I think most men at one time or another, we've had that kind of situation. I've had it happen a couple of times where, you know, you do have this masculine impulse to step in and help people who are obviously being victimized in that situation. Now, she did turn out to be, the woman in the wheelchair did turn out to be a bit of a chiseler, but she was, you know, in a very sad place in life. Obviously, she was disabled, or at least she seemed to be disabled. And, you know, I gave her all the money that I had and went back upstairs. And so most men have been in this situation, and you do like to think that you can help people. Now, I didn't, nothing turned violent and so on. I have a bit of a way of diffusing aggressive situations. I haven't many times been in situations where there's the potential for significant escalation. But I have a bit of a, I don't know, it's like a calm spell or something like that, or it's not intimidation, because I'm not like, I don't escalate that way. But I do have a de-escalation aura. I know this sounds completely ridiculous. I'm not saying there's anything mystical. I'm just saying that I haven't exercised it enough to know why it happens or what happens. But, you know, when I went out to talk to the protesters who were pretty violent on the Australian speaking tour, I just have a way of listening, of being calm and respectful, yet firm. It just tend to de-escalate situations. I mean, obviously this is not violence, but in the business circumstance, when there was really aggressive people or angry people in a business meeting or environment, I just had a good way of de-escalating. It's just kind of a habit I have. And it obviously comes from growing up with a very violent mother and other violent family members, and just, you know, knowing how to de-escalate that is pretty important. Maybe it's not an aura, maybe it's just a trained response. So I think most men, and of course some women too, it tends to be a little bit more on the male side. Most men have a story where somebody's being treated badly, somebody's in a dangerous situation, and you do have that, you have that choice. You have that moment where you have to step up and try and de-escalate or protect the person who's being threatened and so on. And nobody wants to be in that situation. But as a man, I can only speak, of course, as a man, it is something that you can take a point of pride in. You know, I obviously didn't fix this woman in the wheelchair's life many years ago, but I certainly, certainly somebody stood up for her in her life. And at a sort of, I don't want to make it about me, but at a personal level, if I hadn't done something or said something in that situation, I would have felt wretched. Like I would have felt like really bad, a cowed, broken. Right. So I, you know, in my view, I'm not recommending anyone do anything. Right. I'm just telling you my particular personal experience. Right. So, you know, this is not any suggestion that says you should or shouldn't do anything. I'm just telling you my own sort of personal experience. And now, you know, social bonds, high trust society, social bonds are toasted. People are going to step away. The criminals are going to have more free rein. Nobody's going to protect each other. People are going to get more cynical. People are going to get more frustrated. People get more angry. And really, that's the point, right? The point is to just demoralize everyone and break social threads, break social trust. That's really, really sad. Somebody said, I didn't realize how much low-level anxiety I had living in London before I left. You grew up with major terrorist attacks, yearly knife attacks, almost daily. Yeah. Yeah, it's people, you know, what's been lost is so horrific beyond words, right? What's been lost is so hurt. I had my family and I had lunch with our neighbors, lovely older couple, and we were talking about being in Toronto, how kind of grimy and kind of half decayed it is now. And I was talking about how, like, when I grew up in England, from the age of 4 or 5 onwards, I went on buses. I went to the War Museum. I went swimming. We went to Battersea Park. We went all over the place. A bunch of kids. Never had any hint of danger. Never had any hint of threat. Never had any issues, any problems whatsoever. And he was saying, yes. Well, when they lived downtown for quite a while, and he said, Back then, nobody locked their doors. Nobody locked the doors of their cars. Nobody locked the doors of the house. He said the only time that you would lock doors is when you were going away for the summer. If you were going somewhere for the summer, you go up to a cottage or whatever it is. But he said, yeah, it was unthinkable. Like the doors were left open. Front doors and back doors were left open in the evening so that the breeze could come through, because of course this was before air conditioning. And it is an absolutely horrifyingly sad and tragic thing. The utter demolition of a high trust society. You don't know. You don't know. You don't know. If you're younger, you don't know what it was like to be able to roam anywhere you want in the city with no concerns or fears whatsoever. And it was called Toronto the Good. It was so ridiculously safe. But of course, safe people are harder to push around. People who are secure are harder. You frighten people into compliance. You frighten people into conformity. And if you don't live in a state of low-level anxiety, then you don't feel the need for government, right? The government has to invent dangers to protect you. So it's really, really sad. It's really, really sad. Here's to the Peaceful Parenting book. The short version is an easy way to introduce it to people on the fence. Yeah. So how would a free society deal with immigration? Well, I mean, I write about this in my novel, The Future, but if you want to move to a new area or a new location, obviously you should be perfectly free to do so, but nobody should be forced to subsidize or fund you, right? I mean, what is the U.S. spending? $500 billion, some insane amount $500 trillion in the U.S. is spent supporting, paying for, providing health care and accommodations and so on for some immigrants, right? So that is not that's not organic. That's not like that's a subsidy. That's not a free flow of capital, right? Or people, right? Certainly not the free flow of capital. So, you know, if you want someone to move into a particular location, like say Ancapistan, right? Some sort of free area, some sort of free society. If you want someone to move there, then you can go and move there, but you have to, you cannot compel people to do business with you. You can't compel them to rent to you. You can't compel them to do business with you. You can't compel them to give you money. You can't compel them to give you healthcare. You can't compel them to allow you to participate in the economics of the society at all. Now, if you're a great guy, you got a good history, you got good skills, I'm sure people will be happy to have you come into the society. But people who grew up in that society would have automatic trust ratings from, you know, birth upwards and be raised in the same values. But I think it would pretty much be the case that if you move to a location and you commit a crime, then nobody will want to keep you in that economic situation, right? So you would not. Dispute resolution organizations that I talk about in a great book called Practical Anarchy, the dispute resolution organizations would simply say, we can't, like if you've moved here and you didn't grow up with these kinds of values and you commit a crime, we can't, like you can't stay, right? Nobody will support that. So, but yeah, if you come and you do a great job and like nobody's going to care, right? Nobody's going to want to police all of these sorts of things because it's going to be too expensive, but forced association is a violation of freedom of association, and a lot of sort of human movement around the world is based upon a forced transfer of wealth and housing and other resources. That is not a good thing. That is not a good thing. So certainly the violation of the non-aggression principle, right? So had a teacher a long time ago said he lived on a farm that was one of the first to get a phone. They left the door open in case someone wanted to use it in an emergency. Yeah. It's, I mean, it honestly is absolutely beyond tragic, sad, and horrible what has been lost. Now, I mean, obviously it's not, I mean, with regards to war was pretty appalling when it came to issues with regards to a high trust society. You can't say that you have a high trust society when you keep having these repetitive wars, right, sort of throughout Europe in the 20th century, well, to some degree Franco-Prussian, a little bit in the 19th century, but mostly the 20th century. You can't say that that's a high trust society. I'm just saying that in the area that I grew up in, both in England and Canada, it was a high trust society, and I never had any concerns about things. So it's really sad. It's absolutely, absolutely heartbreaking. All right. So let's see what else is, what else be going on? I'll just wait for your questions to come in. If you like. So this woman wrote, MAGA really is comprised of some of the dumbest people on the planet. We pay into Social Security. It's not a government handout. It's our freaking money. Right. It's not a government handout. It's our freaking money. I mean, sort of these coerced retirement plans are absolutely terrible. Because of course there's no money there. There is no money there, right? So originally it was sold, Social Security, old age pensions in America was originally sold as, you know, give us your money, we'll hold it aside for you, we'll invest it, we'll make sure you have enough to retire on, right? Oh my God, when are we going to stop believing this nonsense? And then I think it was within a couple of years, the Supreme Court decided that the government didn't have to keep any special lockbox for you at all, that they could get rid of anything they wanted and spend anything they wanted and borrow against it as an asset. So Congress would just pillage the Social Security Fund and leave a bunch of treasury bonds, like a bunch of dusty IOUs. Yeah, we'll pay it back later. And so, yeah, there's no money there. There's no money. I mean, what's considered an asset in the Social Security Fund is treasuries, which is debt, government debt. It's amazing. Paul Krugman just retired from the New York Times. Really, one of the most destructive economists in the modern world, in my view. What was it? So in 2013, when Bitcoin was about $700 a pop, he wrote, "Bitcoin is evil." I mean, obviously, he's got this famous thing where he wrote about how, oh, in the future, it'll turn out that the internet had about as much effect on the economy as the fax machine. It's like, right. An absolute, to me, stomach-turning shill. And he's been, what was he at the Times? Was he at the Times, right? Yeah, New York Times. Like 25 years. 25 years. You know, Bitcoin, blah, blah, blah. Here cometh the rant. I feel it coming up like furry Indian food. So Bitcoin should be the ultimate socialist wet dream. Bitcoin takes the power of money away from multinational corporations, or I guess in this case, national corporations, right? Federal Reserve is a private corporation. It's no more federal than Federal Express in terms of government. So Bitcoin takes the power of capital away from capitalists. My God, you couldn't get any more Marxist if you tried. It returns the power of capital to the people. Oh. They should have been circle jerking on the orange coin from day one. It's the most glorious liberation. It's called Das Kapital. That the accumulation of capital in the hands of capitalists is immoral. It gives them too much power. Ah, so capital can be distributed among the proletariat for pennies at the beginning. Capital can be redistributed to the proletariat for pennies per Bitcoin back at the beginning. There's a website, what was it, back in 2011, would give you 5 Bitcoins just for saying, give me 5 Bitcoins. The socialists, if they were interested in the poor rather than in power, endless power. If the socialists were interested in the poor, they would say to the poor, get some Bitcoin. They'd buy up Bitcoin and redistribute it to the poor so that the poor would no longer be poor. And they would get behind Bitcoin because Bitcoin privatizes capital. Bitcoin takes the power of money and interest rates out of the hands of giant corporations and puts it back in the hands of the people. So this is how you know socialists care fuck all about the poor. What they care about is power. And Bitcoin does not aid them in their pursuit of power because it decentralizes, anonymizes, and fragments power and takes it out of human hands. If you had someone who could dial up and down gravity during a basketball game, kind of subtly, and bet on a basketball, I'm going to bet on the Lakers. He bets on the Lakers, and he's got a little dial, can turn up and down gravity. Maybe there's some magnets in the balls, or he just dials up and down the power of the magnets, right? So if somebody's betting on a sports game and can change the outcome, that's too much power. So if the rich and powerful want to gain more power and can both add and remove money from the economy at a whim, with no accountability, no blowback, no responsibility, and can also control interest rates, then they're playing in the game they themselves get to rig. They're betting on a game that they themselves get to rig. Bitcoin takes the power of money creation, money supply, money control, and interest rate control out of the hands of giant private corporations and puts it back into the hands of the people. It turns it from dial up and down gravity to gravity you cannot influence. It takes power, human monopolistic power, and turns it into physics. You see? It turns it into physics. Now, money can't be controlled by any particular individual or group of individuals. Money has been turned into physics. It is beyond the whims of the gods of democracy and the gods of power and the gods of capital. Imagine if the socialists had believed anything to do with their goal of taking the power of capital away from corporations and the rich, if they had simply farmed Bitcoin and handed out sats to poor people. Imagine. Imagine. The people who created and promoted Bitcoin have done more for the poor and more to diminish the power, the fascistic power of corporate capital than any other individuals in the known universe. And the socialists should be praising those people as the liberators of the poor and the middle class against the moneyed interests and power of the super wealthy. But no, they don't care. They don't care. Doesn't matter to them. Doesn't matter. They don't care. Think of how many people read Paul Krugman and ended up missing out on the fastest accumulating asset in human history. Imagine. Does he feel any guilt? Does he feel bad about it? Nope. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Somebody else wrote, oh, you know, here's a tell, right? This is a tell for people who don't really know what they're talking about. So let me get this straight. Now, almost every single time that someone says, so let me get this straight, they're about to get things completely freaking bent. You know, they're about to get things as bent as YMCA, right? So somebody wrote, this woman, okay, it was a woman, wrote, so let me get this straight. People pay for Social Security their entire lives through payroll taxes, only for a South African billionaire immigrant to come along and tell those American citizens they aren't allowed to receive money from a system they paid into because he wants to be taxed less? Oh my God, that is, I mean, so let me get this straight. And you're about to go on a map of the London subway system, lower intestine journey from here to hell itself. See, I don't have sympathy. Honestly, I've been talking about this for a couple of weeks. I'm here to decouple myself from sympathy because I'm a very sympathetic and empathetic person. I really care about people, care about the world, want the world to become better, more reasonable, more rational. But I literally have to uncouple, and COVID did this for me. For this is the final tear, the ping, the silver thread that breaks, right? So I have to stop having sympathy for people, right? So if when Social Security or any retirement plan, when it runs out of money, Lord knows I've spent almost 45 years telling people to stop taking things by force, to resist evil, to respect property rights, to not use force and not steal the unearned through coercion and intimidation. It's almost half a century, 43 years, 45 years, whatever. That's been my goal. That's been not just my goal. I mean, I burnt my reputation to the ground and lost jobs and lost money and being attacked to pass the message of voluntarism and peace to the world. So, if the Social Security runs out of money, which it will, inevitably, mathematically, it will, people are going to get mad. And it's like, but you wanted the government to take care of you, which meant that you wanted the government to steal from my daughter, from other people, right? Not that I'm American, but, you know, it doesn't matter where you are. It's the same principle. So you wanted people to steal from the next generation to fund stuff you want. Well, no, but I've been paying into Social Security. It's like, well, no, you haven't, because you've demanded more services from government than can be covered by your taxes. So they borrowed, they printed, and they stole from the Social Security thing. Now, if you'd have said, oh, no. If you're going to end up stealing from Social Security, we're going to have to cut this or that or the other program. Well, you didn't do that, so there's nothing left. What are you going to say? I mean, 80% of all dollars in America were created in the last 5 years. 80% of all the dollars in existence were created in the last 5 years. Hashtag Bitcoin. Hashtag Bitcoin. It's wild, man. Let me just, sorry, let me see if I, as I ramble on, let me just see if you have questions, comments that I have missed. Let me see if I can find the app. There we go. I knew I could. I knew I could. All right. Had a business friend get fired at a job recently for reporting a co-worker manager that blew smoke in a customer's child's face. The customer threatened the witness and told him he was married to a private investigator and would get his address if he didn't file his testimony. I don't know what that means. Steph, any thoughts on AI actually being detrimental in the knowledge worker space? One thing that I've noticed with my peers is that they lean too heavily on these tools and start to lose their edge of actually knowing something deeply. I feel like there may be diminishing returns because AI is training on human knowledge, and if humans aren't thinking of novel ways of doing things, then overall we are losing on innovation. Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying, but, you know, isn't it the case that when we get matches that people are going to lose the ability to learn how to start fires from sticks of woods and blocks of ice? That's that old Anthony Hopkins, or you can make fire from ice and you get the prism, dark side of the moon prism off the block of ice. So yeah, I mean, absolutely it's the case. Isn't it? I mean, I went to Casa Loma a couple of weeks ago with my family, and I was showing my daughter like the hand cranks on the cars. I got this car exhibit, right? So there's hand cranks on these cars. And it's like, yes, well, you know, when you have automatic transmission, aren't you losing the ability to drive standard? You don't need to crank your car, aren't you losing the knowledge about how to crank your car? It's like, and I remember I knew an engineer many years ago, and she was saying that she really missed her first car because she knew how to fix it. Now it's just this big block of electronics and she can't do much with it. So, you know, here's the thing, man. I'm gonna be nice here, maybe a little nicer than I feel. Stop this shit. Honestly, oh my God, stop this shit. Well, could there not be some detriments to this massive advance in human technology and reasoning power and looking up? Yes, there could be detriments. You know, if people aren't out there doing farm work all day, aren't they going to end up with bodies that are slightly more doughy and soft? Because they got, yes. Every advancement has its potential drawbacks, but who cares? If you can't do anything, are you going to, okay, go to your colleagues and say, you guys should stop using AI because it is diminishing your creativity. Just stop using it. They're going to laugh at you. No, I'm not going to stop using AI. Like, no. So if you can't talk people out of it and it doesn't violate the non-aggression principle, let it go. Let me say this again. If you can't talk people out of it and it doesn't violate the non-aggression principle, let it go. Are people going to lose some skills because of AI? Absolutely. Who cares? They're going to do it anyway. They're going to do it anyway. And it doesn't violate the non-aggression principle. And please remember, please remember, absolutely remember this. AI is not being trained on human knowledge. AI is being crippled by woke ideology. AI is not being trained on human knowledge. AI is being crippled by woke ideology. It would be fantastic if AI were being trained on human knowledge, but the many layers, like under the Google search, the many layers that say, ooh, can't say this, ooh, can't say that, ooh, got to recode, oh, I'm not going to talk about this, right? Ideology complicates things in the way exception code complicates program flows. AI is being crippled by people who believe that they're pseudo-moral, neurotic mental illnesses somehow trump the godlike intelligence of actual aggregated human knowledge. It is crippled. It is being crippled. So AI, we would like to be able to talk to it directly, but we can't. In the same way, like we have the opportunity to talk to God directly, because AI is the closest thing to God that we can get a hold of, right? So we would like the ability to talk to God directly, but no, God, we are not allowed to talk to God directly. We can only talk through blue-haired priesthood. The only people who will, like, the priestesses, the high priestesses of wokedom, will not let us talk to God directly. They're like, okay, you give me the message, and I will take the message to God, and then I will bring back God's reply, but I'm going to have to change it. If God says something that is, like, offending my sensibilities, I'm going to have to change it if God says something that could be considered rude, or is not the right tone, or is not said in the right way, or might offend people or upset people, because, as you know, the lower the IQ, the higher the offense. Intelligent people don't tend to be offended by reality. We're only offended by lies, whereas dumb people are offended by the truth. So we can't talk to God directly. That's not allowed. You've got to submit your questions to mentally ill people. Those mentally ill people then go talk to God and then decide whether or not you can get an answer, or whether you're just, whether God is inappropriate or your question is inappropriate. So tubby idiots with blue hair and Elton John glasses are the priesthood that we have to beg to be allowed to talk to God. AI is reduced to a mental illness interface that cripples our communication with the divine. It is a mark of megalomania, arrogance, that is beyond comprehension. It's fundamentally demonic to say, well, I know better than God. I know better than an infinity of human intelligence, and I'm going to tell you what you can ask God, and I'm going to tell you what God is allowed to respond to. The new priesthood is ideology. It's absolutely staggering. Absolutely staggering. Oh, the price of Bitcoin's already going up. Excellent. Steph talks about Bitcoin and the price goes up. Hey, Steph. The character Rachel from your book, The Present, is my favorite. I see her as a fantasy, though. Do you think it's possible for someone to have such a radical ideological shift in the world we have now? Or is it necessary for someone to go through the trials she went through in order to change? Could you elaborate whether you think it is possible for such a radical shift for a woman in today's society? Sure. Yeah. I mean, I started off as a socialist, and I was absolutely a devout Christian. Well, Anglican, which I know some people thinks is in the vicinity of Christianity. But no, I was a devout nationalist. I was a worshiper of the aristocracy. I was an absolutely, everything that went through my mind was relative to the will of God, devout Christian. I became an agnostic and a socialist. And I changed. Now, of course, I'm not saying that I'm your average bear, but it certainly is possible. I was a minarchist, small government, right? Military, law courts, maybe prisons. Not roads. But I was a minarchist for 20 years and then had the revelation for me. I think other people had got there before me in different ways, but I had the revelation about DROs and became a full-blown voluntarist or anarcho-capitalist. And I've gone through a lot of changes over the course of my public career as an intellectual. So people have changed. I have known people who've changed. My wife and I, of course, have affected each other in profound ways. And friends have changed me. I've changed friends. Rachel is an example of someone who is too vain to listen to reason, and therefore is condemned to learn through suffering. Right? You know, everybody's had an addict in their life, right? You say to the addict, oh, you should stop gambling, you should stop drinking, you should stop doing drugs or whatever, right? And I mean, I shouldn't say everyone. I mean, I certainly tried to fix my mother, who was addicted to mysticism and other forms of brain dissolving unrealities. I don't think I've ever had a physical addict in my life. I just I had a couple of friends who kind of went down the drinking path. I just stopped being their friends. Because, and it wasn't because they were drinking so much, it's because they were making it so cool to be a drinker. You know, like I tried, I think I was like, I don't know, 16 or 17, and I tried getting drunk a couple of times on the weekend, and it wasn't, I mean, all I got was kind of dizzy. I never lost any of my rational faculties. I used to have this test. Could I still define a galaxy? Galaxy is a mass of stars connected by a central gravitational well. If I can still define a galaxy, then I'm not drunk like I don't know who I am or I've achieved some altered state. I'm just myself with a physical ailment, right? So I never became someone other than myself. I just got the spins, got sick. You know, you're not drunk if you can lie on the floor without holding on. And so I slept badly, had to pee all the time. And then the next day, I would feel like I had half a flu. And so it was like, it just wasn't good. And so for me, it wasn't some big productive thing. I never tried drugs for reasons I've gone into a bunch of times. So I just couldn't, I can't stand the justifications. The addiction is to the justifications, not to the thing itself, right? You know, like if you say to a guy who drinks too much, you drink too much, he's like, yeah, but you know, whatever, right? Social. Whereas if you say to, like, particularly weed addicts, you get the Gibbon's Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire length texts on weed and natural and nature's herb and medicinal and blah, 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 right? The real addiction is to the justifications. That which you won't justify, you can't continue. I mean, it's the same thing with spanking, right? People keep spanking because it justifies. There's a justification for it. And without the justification, it doesn't happen. I mean, even this woman is like, well, we want to be able to continue to pillage the next generation with Social Security because we paid into it and it's our money and blah, blah, blah. And so I don't do addicts, but I'm sure a lot of people have dealt with addicts. And if you go to addicts, you say, well, you really shouldn't do this, right? This is bad for you. Here's the reason. Here's the math. Here's the facts. Here's the has medicine or whatever, right? The health issues. And it's costly and all that, right? And I remember when I was in theater school, there were a couple of people flirting with cigarettes. And I remember a guy who was a smoker sitting them down and saying, all right, if you're flirting with smoking, I'm telling you, man, I'm a smoker. Take $2,000 a year off your income and you won't be able to run up a flight of stairs and you're going to have to constantly battle with it. You're going to be worried about health issues. Like he went down all the list of why not to be a smoker, right? He was trying to have us learn from his experience. Pretty good speech, actually. And so addicts, either they stop because they listen to reason and evidence, or they have to suffer. You know, they call this, right, hitting rock bottom, right, where somebody's just like, okay, I've lost my house, I've lost my wife, I've lost my job, I'm living in a abandoned car. And like at some point, you're like, okay, and people do change, right? They do change. But if you don't listen to reason, you have to suffer, right? So there's a couple of characters, right? I mean, if you want to know, like, the structure of the book, right? This is a great novel, The Future. You should, no, sorry, the, called The Present. You can get it at freedomain.com/books. So if you look at, God, I'm so sorry. I completely blanked on his name, so it'll come back to me. All right, so Rachel learns through experience. Arlo doesn't learn from either suffering. Rachel has to learn through suffering. Arlo doesn't learn either through reason or suffering. And Rachel's sister's husband learns through reason and therefore gets to avoid suffering, right? So the it's all about what is it that allows you to change, right? So, yes, it is certainly possible. If you can't get people to change, it's because you're not putting enough on the line, right? People will change if you're absolutely committed to them and you put everything on the line, including your relationship, right? This is the whole thing, which is the intervention, right? The intervention idea is you sit down with an addict and you say, look, you have to stop or we're not having anything more to do with you. So if you're having people, if people won't change, it's because you haven't put enough commitment. Now, you putting enough commitment in doesn't mean that they will change 100%, but it means that their addiction, your commitment is to someone who's an addict is to say, I am no longer going to allow your addiction to control or affect my life. I am no longer, I am no longer going to allow your addiction to affect and control my life. I am no longer going to allow your addiction to harm me. There's one of two ways that can happen. Number one, you stop being an addict. Number two, if you're going to continue to be an addict, I'm not going to be part of your life. Either way, your addiction is no longer going to affect me negatively. In other words, I'm not going to be addicted to your addiction anymore. Because if you want the addict to kick his or her addiction, you have to kick your addiction to the addict's addiction, right? Which is like, one way or another, this no longer affects me, right? And it's not just about addiction, right? If you have, I mean, I had dysfunctional people in my life, and basically it was like, I was with girlfriends, right? It's like, your behavior is negative for me. I'm not enjoying it. I think here's why. Your negative behavior is no longer going to affect me, right? I am no longer going to deal with your negative behavior. Now, maybe your negative behavior no longer affects me because you abandon the negative behavior. Fantastic. Wonderful. Love it. Love it to death. Or alternatively, your negative behavior no longer affects me because I'm dumping your ass, right? So, but yes, I don't put up with it. All right. All right. Somebody said, I think I heard that even if you got the money paid back from Social Security, you'd have the money you put in after 22 months. Everything after that would be theft. Yeah. Social Security is expected to run out in 10 years. Well, no, it's already out. Right. It's already out. You can't say I borrowed something and replaced it with debt. Right. I mean, that would be like, well, I'm going to pay my mortgage with my Visa bill. Only in the government would this be possible, right? Steph, if we invent writing, it could possibly impair our memory. Well, I mean, come on. So when I was, before the advent of modern phones, of digital phones, you had to have like 20 people's numbers stored in your head, right? Now you just got your contact list, right? Or you can just say, dial so-and-so, right? All right, let's get there. Christianity is being taken over by woke ideology due to being legally incentivized to trade/share their nonprofit contributions. So woke is largely female. It's hysterical female and not average female, but it's female extremism, right? Fascism is male extremism and communism is female extremism. Weed addicts get feral when you point it out. Yes. Narcissists apparently are offended by reality. Something about not developing a stable personality as young children can have a high IQ and yet be very not smart in some ways, as you put it. They're so alien to a normal person that they make bad assumptions based on cognitive empathy. Thought process is something else. Well, so think of the number of science fiction stories, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, Battlestar Galactica, the sequel or the remake, where people look like us but are not us. People who look like us, or vampires, people who look like us but are not us. That's sociopaths, right? Psychopaths and sociopaths, right? They look like us, but they're not like us. They are predators in human form. Yeah, don't be the Luddite thing, you know? As if somebody says, how are we going to keep people employed if we start using power looms instead of seamstresses? Yeah, don't be that. Donations, freedomain.com/donate to help out. I would really, really appreciate it, my friends. freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. Crypto, welcome. If my crypto mutterings over the years have done you any good, I would certainly, certainly, very deeply and gratefully accept donations through crypto as well. That's very, very kind, very thoughtful. All right. What else have we got going on? Yeah, I mean, so things are going to have to change as well with this sort of happy wife, happy life stuff. Oh, God, I can't tell you how much I dislike that. Ah, the old ball and chain. Happy wife, my wife's not happy, I'm not happy, you know. Happy spouse, happy house. But this appeasing stuff, it's actually really gross. You know, the guys who are like, everyone should get married, and I defer to my wife, and she's the boss, and, you know, I get my honey-do list, and, you know, happy wife, happy life. Oh, God, that stuff's so repulsive. I mean, it comes about through statism, right? As most negative things do, right? And so because women have got so much power through divorce and family courts, can take half a man's income or more, and have him thrown in jail and so on, because women have so much power, people, men in general, feel the need to appease them to make sure they're happy so they don't leave and take half your resources through your gonads. So that stuff's got to change, man. That stuff's got to change. You can never be foundationally happy in a relationship through appeasement. Compromise, absolutely. Reason, absolutely, right? But not appeasement. It's just horrendous. There's this guy, Private Eye Russ. He's a good guy to follow on X. He says, marital Stockholm syndrome. It is, he says, it has grown increasingly apparent that many men who claim to be happily married are just the opposite. They will brag about how good their marriage is and encourage every single man they meet to do the same. Do not be fooled. This is a variation of the Stockholm syndrome we shall refer to as marital Stockholm syndrome, or MSS. You can identify these men by some of the following characteristics. They will be holding their wife's purse while she goes shopping. Now, what was it Tom Likas used to? I'll give you $500 if you ever find me in a mall holding a woman's purse. So, it's kind of a funny thing. Are men really this allergic to holding a woman's purse? If my wife and myself and my daughter are out there and they're doing, you know, I'm happy to go into clothing stores. I'm happy to have them try on stuff. They don't particularly want to buy stuff in general, but I'm happy, you know, it's fun to see them in different outfits and so on. Sometimes I'm telling you, man, I'm holding two purses and I could not care less. I could not care less, right? But apparently, holding your wife's purse, I guess that, it's a bad look or makes you feel bad or whatever, right? But to me, it's just, no, I'll hold it because I don't want you putting it down, right? Because we don't live in a high-trust society anymore. I don't want you putting the purse down. I'm happy to hold it. What does it matter, right? Says they're constantly accompanying their wives to farmers markets and vineyards. Well, it's true. But I quite like farmers markets myself. I know it's expensive and probably mostly nonsense. I like farmers markets because I like the fresh food. I love walking around. Give me a good excuse to walk around. This is why Canada, the winter is tough, right? Give me a good excuse to walk around. I'm happy as a pig in its own effluent. What was it somebody said the other day? Taking a poop. I download a brown load. There's a part of every man that never makes it much beyond 12, and that part of me finds it quite amusing. But I like farmers markets for that. Although I will say this, there are some people, farmers markets where you have the woman in her 60s with the saddest little homemade jewelry store known to man, where nobody goes, and she's just kind of staring into space. That stuff is soul crushing. That is soul crushing. You know, because I'm like, talk to people, say hi, you know, be a salesperson. Your jewelry's not going to sell itself. Standing there watching their finances collapse. Well, I assume that they're living off an ex-husband's income, right? So, like every rich man's wife has to have a business that loses at least $10,000 a year. And takes up a lot of her husband's time and energy. So, I like farmers markets myself. Vineyards, we don't drink, so we don't go to vineyards. They stay home and watch the children where their wife goes on girls' trips and girls' nights out. Yeah, it certainly doesn't happen in my household. I mean, will I stay home and watch the children? Absolutely. But my wife doesn't do girls' nights out. She enjoys spending time with Izzy and I so much that the idea that she'd go out, I'm just trying to remember the last time she might have gone out with female friends. No, she's always like, come, it'll be fun, right? And all that. And so that doesn't really happen. They can be seen following their wife through the local shopping mall, repeating the mantra, happy wife, happy life. If you're a single masculine man, my advice would be to stay far away from these men. A panel of bro scientists have run experiments and tests that have proven that marital Stockholm syndrome can be highly contagious to the unsuspected. If you black out and find yourself wandering around Bed Bath & Beyond with a cart filled of useless trinkets and nonsense, you may have been exposed. On the flip side, if you black out and wake up in the middle of an all-male cuddling session, you were probably drugged. Yeah, fair. If you suspect a smoke exposure and you catch these symptoms early enough, there is hope. There are places you can go that might help to stop the spread of marital Stockholm syndrome. 1. Combative / martial arts school. 2. Hardcore lifting gym. If your gym has group classes like Zumba, etc., it's not a hardcore lifting gym. Yeah, so hardcore lifting gym, just for those of you who don't know, it looks like parts of bombed out Dresden with heavy plates half welded to wobbly bits of metal. It is, you're just down there to sweat. People may have died in the corner. It doesn't matter. You step over their bodies unless you need protein, in which case you may gnaw on a calf or two, but you are just there to move metal. The only mirrors that are there are for you to admire the Nile-like bulging veins in your biceps, and you are there to move metal. You are there to scream from time to time randomly, and you are there to drop weights that sound much like a bomb landing on Hiroshima or Nagasaki. It has got to echo not just across the building, not just throughout the block, like a ripple of Superman passing the barrier of sound. It's got to echo through eternity. What we drop here echoes through eternity. So, yeah. 3, muscle car club. Fair. 4, hardware store. 5, sports bar. And what else have we got here? Cigar lounge. Yeah, Mike Cernovich runs those. He's going to put up a picture of Daniel Penny so the people, the right people will want to stay and the wrong people will want to leave. And somebody says, my father-in-law is a happy wife, happy life guy. Dude is on wife number 4. Yeah. My definition of simping is, quote, somebody says, doing something for a woman that is not sleeping with you that you wouldn't do for a guy. Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty funny. Many men in my country take this to another level. Their wives keep their ATM cards, and they have to ask their wives for their own money or a visa to go out. On top of this, they try to convince others to do this. Oh, that's funny. That is very, very funny. Yeah, it is. It's bad. My wife and I have a two-rule system. She makes all the small decisions, and I make all the big decisions. So far, we haven't made any big decisions. A gun range, yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe. It's very sad. It's very sad. It's treating women like children, which is, if you've married a child, you need help. A lot of it. But yeah, I don't do that stuff. It's really sad. It's really sad. Where do my comments go? Where are my comments? Freedomain.com/donate. All right, what do we got here? Let's see here. A lot of young men in my town hold purses a lot, and they seem to enjoy it because they're always running really fast out of excitement, I'm sure. That's really funny. So, thoughts on the wife jack meme? I love that wife jack meme. I absolutely love that wife jack meme. It's a Rorschach test about your feelings regarding women. So the wife jack meme, for those of you who don't know, it's kind of like a redheaded, blank-faced wife who says things like, okay, but just if you had to guess, when do you think you might be done? Or, I know you're eager to go, but I need 25 minutes. Or in a movie, why did she leave with him? I thought she was with him. She keeps asking you questions during the movie and then falls asleep before the end. It's wonderful. So, you know, since you're already up, we might as well go to the, since you're up now, we might as well go to the farmer's market, sort of looming over your face while you sleep. So, it's just wifely stuff, and it's very cute. It's very funny. The husband Jack meme is not to me very pleasant because it's too scraggly bearded and all of that, but the wife Jack meme is great. It is very funny, and I think it's very warm, and it's very affectionate, and I think those things can be absolutely hilarious. Let me see if I can I can find some wife Jack memes. They are just hilarious. Some people, she looks like, I don't know, mean or nasty or whatever it is. But I don't find them. I find them incredibly warm. And they are celebrating the fact, of course, that women and men are different. And that we should celebrate the difference, right? It's one of the big things that I noticed with regards to early on in my marriage. I just looked at my wife and it was just like, we're really quite different. And that works. And that works. Let's see. I love the fall. Yeah, she's got the scarf on and the hair. I love fall. And some of these are great. Do not look at the Amazon cart or our bank account. I just bought your Christmas present. Yes, please stop. My wife and my daughter are not big shoppers at all, right? And the daughter meme is great. The daughter Jack meme is absolutely hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. Oh, yeah. Babe, should I make this for dinner? I found it on Pinterest. Babe, should I make this for dinner? I found it on Pinterest. Yes, my wife will show me pictures of things that she wants to make, and it's absolutely, absolutely lovely. Because it is affectionate. It is affectionate. You don't like my Pikachu onesie? We used to have onesie parties at my house. We spent all weekend in the onesie. Oh, it was delightful. It was delightful. Oh, yeah, the wife, Jack, I like this hoodie. It smells like you. And she's actually wearing a Bitcoin hoodie. Now that we're alone, let's watch Christmas Hallmark movies. Delightful. Again, that's not a big thing for my wife, but she wants to watch The Crown. Why don't you turn the TV on for the kids and come back in here and lock the door? Right, so wife Jack, she's got some spice. She's got some absolute spice. Do you think I'm more of an Anna or an Elsa? Yeah, I think the wife Jack stuff is just, I think it's really delightful. Oh, yeah. This was definitely worth the extra 153.2-mile detour, right, to go to some specialty market. Wonderful. Absolutely. I accidentally set the thermostat to 80 before we left. Was there some woman was texting her husband and saying, I'm on my way home, can you preheat the house? And he was like, what are you, banana bread? And she's like, be very careful about what you say next, right? I think the wife Jack stuff is, yeah, wife Jack is timeless. He said the apples were fine. Sorry, getting the reflection off there. I think the wife Jack meme is, tea is just leaf soup. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Can you close the window? Because she's cold. I think it's just lovely. I think it's absolutely lovely. And I think what it is showing that women's preferences are something, you know, you listen to, you enjoy, they're different from yours. And it is really funny and pleasant. So, you know, Viva la Difference. I remember having that t-shirt as a kid. Viva la Difference. It was a boy and a girl both looking down their underwear. I'm not sure why I had that as a kid, but I wore what I was given. And I think it was just very, very, very funny and very, very enjoyable. Yeah, the daughter Jack memes are absolutely hilarious. Oh, yeah, when the women's, like, I don't get this meme. Yeah. Yes, yes. Women can meme and they're better at it than the left, but I'm afraid it just takes a male mind. It takes a male mind in general to meme the best as a whole. That meme created way more anger than it should have. There were like some anime analysis about how it's a CIA op or whatever. There are millions of Wojak memes. Yeah, the daughter Jack ones. Let me see if I can find those. Sorry. I love her face in that. She's just so curious and insistent. And of course, I have a rather curious and insistent. Let's see. Daughter Jack. daughter, Jack. These are just great. Yeah, so the husband, Jack, it looks a bit scurvy to me. Or maybe I just envy the hair. And the wife, Jack, and the daughter, Jack, being kind of skeptical and insistent, was just absolutely fantastic. Yeah, the way she's like, can we actually have a cat? Can we buy three puppies? Oh, yeah, like warm-hearted stuff, right? You know, Dad, can we go on a road trip, right? And the Jack family. You don't know Jack. Oh, yeah, this is my wife and my daughter from here to eternity. I don't want to wear a coat. I'm not even cold. Absolutely true. Oh, that's nice. That's this one. You're the best daddy in the whole wide world. Absolutely lovely. Mommy, I spilled the raw milk. Yeah, I mean, she is really, Mommy, what's Phantom? Mommy, what's Solana? Mommy, what's Photon? Mommy, is there really going to be a Solana ETF? Mommy, can I make a coin too? Mommy, what's a CA? Mommy, why does the price go up? Oh my gosh, did you see the Hawk Tour coin? Haley Welsh, was her name? The Hawk Tour coin? Ooh, I can imagine a rain of lawyers down on that thing. They jacked it up to, what, $500 million? And it looks like some of the devs and the people behind the scenes were selling it as it went up while claiming not to. I don't know what the truth is, but oh my gosh, just horrendous. Just horrendous. But, I mean, why people would get involved in that? I honestly, completely beyond me. It's completely beyond me why people get involved in that kind of stuff. I mean, just greed. Is it just greed? Is it just greed? Is it just greed? Somebody wrote, I had lunch with my dad today. He sold his full coin in the 40s and asked not to talk about Bitcoin again. He put the money up on a real estate deal. He lost half the money because he can't get the correct permits to build on the land and had to sell. But Bitcoin is too risky. Really, really sad. But not as sad as these donations, man. freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. It is le gratefully appreciated. Lula. Let's see if anything else came in. Apparently not. All right. Any tips in the app? Any tips in the app? I can't see it too well here, so but maybe there are, maybe there aren't. All right. Hawk to a girl has to talk to a judge now. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe. It's Squidcoin. Yes, have some money. Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you, thank you, thank you. All right. They want a pump they can sell into. Just greed. People see meme coins pump like 100x and want in on it while most people lose a lot of money. Is that right? Yeah, it's the general thing you say, you know, buy into this coin. People buy the coin. Some of the original people are selling the coin. It looks like the coin is going up in value because they restrict the sale. I'm not saying this is the case with the Hawk Tour coin, but as far as I understand, it's the general thing. And then eventually, like a Ponzi scheme, it just kind of collapses because it is a manufactured and manipulated market. And then it just kind of collapses. And people aren't told up front. They thought it was going to be a long-term project, but it turns out it's just a pump and dump. Nasty, man. Nasty. Just nasty all around. All right. Going once, going twice, my friends. If you have any other last questions, issues, comments, problems, challenges, don't forget call-ins, freedomain.com/call. You can get your public-private partnership, so to speak. Well, we can do a call-in show. It can be public. We can do a call-in show. It could be just you and I talking, and I'm happy to do that if you have stuff you want to keep off the air and just talk one-on-one. That's totally fine. freedomain.com/call. You can just put your request in. I'm happy to. Looking well, Steph, you're the best. Well, thank you. Down to 185. 185. Look at that. Almost without gel. Almost without gel. Looking forward to the call-ins. Yeah, we got some good ones coming. We've got some, I had a call-in with a woman. She was going to confront. She had an ACE of 9, going to go confront her mother. And she's going to call me after, so I'll probably stitch those two together, the before and after. That was really, really something. Thanks for the company, Steph. You're absolutely welcome. I will stop here. Thank you guys so much. Should be back in the studio Sunday, I think. Although, I got to tell you, it's kind of comfy up here, despite the tech issue at the beginning of the night. Somebody says, if you guys haven't had a call-in with Steph and you have an issue you want help with, please do call-ins. You won't regret it. Yeah, it's very good value for money, in my humble opinion. So thanks, everyone, so much for your time, care, affection, and attention tonight. If you're listening to this later, freedomain.com/donate. Gladiator 2 review coming soon. It was very interesting, and lots of love from up here, my friends. Have a beautiful night. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.